Hello and welcome to the Sound of Economics podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. I'm Sean Gibson, Bruegel's press officer. Thank you for joining me for this instalment of Deep Focus, the series where we get a little more acquainted with the particulars of Bruegel's research. Today we welcome Bruegel Senior Fellow Georg Zachmann. Hello, Georg.
Hello, Sean. It's good to be here.
We're here to discuss your research on the distributional effects of climate change policies. So specifically, why are the distributional effects of climate policy so important?
The start is very simple. Climate change is one of the big questions of this century, and mitigating climate change is one of the big targets that the world community has set itself in the Paris Agreement. And keeping global temperature rise below 2 degrees will require massive policies. So we are talking about essentially reducing the carbon emissions in the European Union to close to zero by the middle of the century. So that will require very intrusive policies, because there will no more oil and coal and gas essentially be burned for heating and transport and electricity production. And that can be only brought about if you really change the incentives of companies and consumers, and therefore policies are needed to be quite strong and intrusive. And such policies will not only have the desired effect, but they will also have significant side effects. And one of the important side effects of such intrusive policies will be distributional consequences. And then if you get to distributional consequences, you very quickly get to the question of political acceptability, which is, if you introduce, for example, a carbon tax that disproportionately falls on the shoulders of certain fractions of the population, then you can be pretty sure that these parts of the population will strongly resist to such policies. So with the distributional effects, you also mean political acceptability.
From your research, are you expecting particularly strong distributional effects from these policies?
Yes. So from what we have been seeing in terms of existing literature, the impression is indeed that rich and poor households differ in various characteristics that are very important for how they will be impacted by climate policies. So, for example, poorer households consume a significantly higher share of goods that might increase in price with climate policies. Just to give you one example, so poorer households consume a very high share of their income on electricity and heating, for example, while for richer households it's a much smaller fraction of their expenditures. Second, poorer households own significantly less efficient consumer durables. They don't buy a AAA refrigerator, but maybe a B refrigerator, simply because they value more their day-to-day consumption than the long-term efficiency of their consumption, because of their budget constraints. And many of the jobs that might be lost in the transition are low-skilled jobs that are typically held by less well-to-do households. And then what that means is that poorer households might also be more affected on this income side. But on the other hand, also richer households own capital assets, and those capital assets might lose value with climate policies. So richer households might be the owners of the coal mines, for example. So overall, what we find is it's a quite complex picture with a lot of drivers. An urban poor, for example, might benefit from a carbon price on road fuels, while a rural poor might be particularly hard hit if road fuel prices increase. So it's not only rich versus poor, but it's also urban versus rural, and a lot of other characteristics: a worker in a coal mine versus a worker in a photovoltaic plant.
So it sounds like each different policy will have a different distributional effect. Is that what you're angling it.
Indeed. So the complexity increases. So you not only different households are impacted to a very different degree, but also each individual policy will have a very unique effect. Take carbon pricing and fuel emission standards, for example. So two policies to reduce emissions for road transport. There are US studies that show that the poor would be more negatively affected by car standards than rich people that often drive more anyway and benefit from more efficient cars. So then it also depends on the sector. So increasing the cost of aviation will affect the poor much less than increasing the cost of electricity, for example, as you easily can imagine. And ultimately, it depends strongly on the design of the concrete policy. So again, an example, the European emission trading system. Here, the cost of carbon pricing falls disproportionately on the poor because of their consumption. So poorer households consume more electricity, which increases in price because of the emission trading system. While on the other end, the companies that essentially have to buy these allowances are largely able to pass through the cost to the consumers because of the structure of the market, and on top of that, they even get free allowances from the state. So they are very likely have received significant windfall profits in the past for their shareholders, which tend to be richer people. So what this example shows you is that the concrete design of the policy here, so the compensation mechanisms and the distribution of the allowance mechanism, they have also significant distributive consequences, and they need to be looked at.
So I can appreciate that the broad range of climate policies affects a broad range of people, but it does also sound as though a lot of these policies will primarily impact poorer people. So is there an argument to be made for not proceeding with climate policies on this basis?
No, definitely not. So we do actually not have a very good understanding on the distributional consequences at that stage. So, as I said, climate policies on the one hand put higher burden on people with a car, that fly a lot, that own brown capital assets, which tend to be richer people. So there might also be countervailing effects that burden richer people more than poorer people. So the net effect is very difficult to establish. And what we are saying is that both in the academic and also in the political discourse on climate policies, the question of distributional consequences should be much higher on the agenda, because we are now moving from a world with carbon prices of €5 per ton to potentially a world of carbon prices in the order of hundreds of euros per ton by 2050. And so the distributional consequences will only increase. And if we don't have a clear look into them, that might have the significant backlash. And the second point is we should definitely do climate policies, even if there are distributional consequences, because as a matter of fact, climate change itself has distributional consequences. Climate change will most likely affect poorer people inside our society more strongly adversely than richer people, because they cannot easily move to places where there is no issue with flooding, and they have also higher food costs in their consumption basket, which might increase with runaway climate change. So not doing climate policies because of fear of distributional consequences would be completely misleading.
So what do you recommend then? What sort of middle way can we take right now?
Our key recommendation would be that the issue should be much more in the focus of the political and academic debate on climate policy. So we should look much deeper into all sorts of distributional consequences. We should check for each policy that we devise how the distributional consequences are. And as a matter of fact, most of the current economic modeling that has been done on climate policies, there is very little work being done consistently on the distributional consequences. Most models work with just one type of households, not looking into rural and urban and poor and rich households separately. And in my view, that is really desirable to improve on that front, to make sure that the issue is measured and then properly addressed. And then in terms of remedies of distributional or adverse distributional consequences, I would argue there's essentially three tools that we can implement. The first tool is compensation. So if we collect carbon taxes, for example, and if we for some reason know that this falls disproportionately on poor people, we can make sure that the state also hands out the money in a form that that helps the poor people more than maybe richer people in order to compensate them for the effect. The second thing is the policy choice. So which policies do we actually implement? So I spoke about, for example, aviation and road transport and electricity. So there's three sectors with quite different distributional consequences of carbon taxation. So we could have a look into what do we prioritize here. And the third point is on policy design, where we can try to look to make the policies themselves as little regressive as possible. In fact, what we might do, and I think they're good examples, and more research also needs to be done on that, thinking about progressive climate policies. So thinking about climate policies that help the poor actually to get to better living standards. Just think of isolation of public housing, which might reduce the fuel cost of poorer households. So there are ways to tackle that, but for all this, what we need to do is we need to measure it, and we need a proper debate on that.
Well, I think that about brings us to the end of this podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode of Deep Focus on the Sound of Economics channel, and thank you very much to my guest, Georg Zachmann. If you're interested in any more of Georg's work, we've a range of blogs and papers on our website, and they're available at www.bruegel.org. I hope you'll join us again for The Sound of Economics. Until next time, bye-bye.